English language teaching under the cover.
Hello and welcome to ELT Under the Covers teaching methodology, where we break down some of the teaching methods in English language teaching. Today, we are going to be looking at an ancient teaching method called grammar translation. But first, introductions. I'm Neil of Team Teacher.
Hello everybody, it's Professor Rich.
Grammar translation, Rich.
Oh.
What do you know? Yeah. How do you feel about it? Have you used it? Have you seen it being used? Or abused?
So let me give my thoughts about this. So first of all, I think that when anyone hears grammar translation, they're just going to instantly recoil back. And I think that the popular opinion is definitely going to be, oh, grammar translation, that's absolutely rubbish. And I think, to be fair, I think it is going to be pretty rubbish. It's a very old method. It's sort of the oldest of the kind of studied methods, right? It's like pre-1900s, really.
Yeah.
And it's a method that was intended for elite academics, basically, to learn other languages. It was really the only formalized method of that time. And, you know, it was taught in universities and prestigious institutions, very much being based on the idea that these people are extremely hardworking, extremely intelligent, and they're going to do all the work and learn the language. So we're going to teach it like this, which is the grammar translation way. However, my caveat to all of this is that really, in seeing this, I want to try and find the positives because, you know, I like to be a bit of a contrarian. So I think it'd be very easy to go into this and to watch some grammar translation stuff and to just be like, yeah, that's a load of bollocks. What's the point of that? You know, grammar translation, ha, ha, ha. We've got our sophisticated communicative language learning here. We don't need no grammar translation boy. But I would actually like to go into this and have a think about some of the positives involved, and at least to consider how has grammar translation positively contributed to language learning today, because I don't think we've done away with everything. And I think there are things, even in a communicative language classroom, that can be drawn from grammar translation methods. So that's what I would like to know.
Okay, I completely agree. And I think with that in mind, what we'll first do is kind of go a little bit deeper and watch together a introduction for the grammar translation method.
Here we are in a Latin class. It's typical of classes all over the country. Why do so many of us study Latin? What can you get out of studying Latin?
The grammar translation method is probably the oldest method for teaching a foreign language. It comes from the classical, aka traditional method of teaching ancient Greek and Latin. In grammar translation classes, students learn grammatical rules and then they apply those rules by translating sentences between the target language and the native language. The method has basically two goals: to enable students to read and translate literature in their source language, and to learn the language more as a subject than a means of communication.
Caesar Sanctae Urbis Romae Augustus, nom legatum ad Germania misi. Senatorem publium quinctilium varum.
Verstehst du, was er sagt?
Futu et te. Velu este porronil tenent.
Say, fella. Huh? This is the Latin class, isn't it?
It originated from the practice of teaching Latin in the early 16th century. Students learned Latin for communication, but after the language died out, it was suddenly purely an academic discipline. When teachers started teaching other foreign languages in the 19th century, they use the same translation-based approach as they've been using for teaching Latin. Now, it's often criticized for its shortcomings in learning a language for communication. But it is still one of the most used methods all over the world in language teaching. So why is that? Are there some advantages to it? Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater and take a deep dive into the grammar translation method. Yeah, so I mentioned in that how it's still one of the most widely used methods for teaching languages. And a lot of that, I think, can be applied to not just the classroom, but also the materials and these like online learning courses and you know like MOOCs and all that sort of thing. You know, it's they're all kind of, this is your language, this is how it translates to English. I saw it a lot in Asia as well. I think it's solely because, and this is one of the major points of the grammar translation method, is the use of the mother tongue. It's there before the language that's being learnt, before English. So if all your books are in the mother tongue, the classroom is in the mother tongue with all the explanations and instructions. Now, I've kind of put a lot of that under the grammar translation method, and I think that's kind of what people think of as the grammar translation method. I believe there's a little bit more to the grammar translation method, because for me, they probably should be a little bit more separate. They should be a language taught in the mother tongue, the native person's, native learner's language, and also grammar translation method. Because when I was looking at grammar translation method, there was a lot of stuff that I saw where I was like, this is actually interesting, because there's a lot of focus on morphology and syntax, on reading difficult text early in the course,
and looking
for meaning. And you know, if anyone's done the CELTA course or has done any sort of levels of teacher training with language teaching, MFP is a bit of a bedrock, you know, meaning, form, pronunciation. You know, we start with meaning and we work out from that. So when I was looking at grammar translation, I was like, actually, it's kind of similar in that they're academically looking for the meaning, that you know, especially you know, with the ancient Greek and Latin, because they're going from ancient Greek to Latin, and then they translated it to German, and then it's going through German to English or other different languages and stuff like that. So they're always kind of going back to make sure that meaning is correct, and they're really studying the whole morphology, syntax, etymology, etc. But I don't see that being applied in the classroom. And the example that we're going to look at today is more of an example of I might refer to as lazy grammar translation.
Right. Yeah, I think that is a very reasonable point. I think that there's the things you can take from the methodology and then how the methodology is actually used in practice. And to be fair, this is something that we've seen in pretty much all of the methodologies that we've looked at. We've seen examples of lazy implementation in the classroom. I mean, maybe one of the positives about community of language teaching is that when it's applied lazily, it still has some benefit, whereas it may well be that other methods are not as able to carry a benefit when they're applied in a lazy manner. I know for a fact that grammar translation is effective. Well, not least of all because it was the only method some time ago and people did learn to be fluent in languages. Mm-hmm. However, there was a forum when I first started learning Spanish, and even before I became a language teacher, actually, I used to participate in a forum, and I think it was called something like How to Learn Any Language Forum or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was like a language learning forum. And it was a bit of a hub on the internet for like polyglots at universities. Like there were lots of people on there who'd like learn, you know, 17 languages, 20 languages. And they, you know, these were authenticated because there were people at like universities, professors and lecturers and PhD students and stuff like that. And they were all just talking about efficiency, like just how do you, and, you know, I remember this one guy, and he was saying like the challenge at this stage for him was maintenance. It was like maintaining his level on all the, he knew so many languages that maintaining his level was just difficult. Mm-hmm. And he primarily employed two tactics. One of them was something he called shadowing, which has also been called listen and repeat, which is that you listen to an audio recording in the language and you actually try to say it at the same time as the recording. So you actually have the text mm-hmm. as well in the target language. And he just walked, it's like just saying it like, quiero ir al cine, y, you know, or whatever it was. Obviously that would be just not very good at all for connected speech. Theoretically, it might be if the audio recording is natural speech, but I think these things tended not to be. Mm-hmm. So he would do that. And that would be his kind of his listening and his pronunciation. And the other thing he would do would be direct grammar translation. So what he would have is he would have a book in the target language and he would translate that to English. Mm. So he would just translate that. He would just take the book and just translate the book, you know, and that was his maintenance. So he knew like 18 or 19 languages. And he basically swore down that that was the most efficient use of his time for doing that. Now, the thing about that is, for the majority of language learners, that's just totally inappropriate, isn't it? Mm-hmm. They're not going to have the discipline to do that. They're not going to necessarily have the same sort of academic rigor. They're not mm-hmm. going to have the same kind of mind as this person. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very specific kind of person with a very specific kind of mind. And the majority of people, that's just not going to work. And that's why we always talk about engagement, because there isn't any engagement. The engagement for him is the academic intellectual challenge. Mm-hmm. But for most people, we need something else. And that's what communicative language teaching is really good at, isn't it? Providing these real situations, that motivation to want to get your ideas across, the information gap and all these kind of things which nicely go into CLT. And we talked about that in the previous mm-hmm. methodology video. So that's my thoughts on when grammar translation could be interesting or applied. And I agree with you that I think in the classroom we're going to see a bit of a mess.
I actually want to add to that point as well, because one of the things with CLT is there is a lot of focus on communication. Now, it's always that balancing act between fluency and accuracy, and it's with just day-to-day communication, it's not that important that you're accurate, just as long as you kind of give more communication, you speak a bit more, and then there's context and people can kind of generally understand what you're trying to get at, especially if it's something simple like you're just wanting to, you know, grab a bag, or, you know, ask someone to pass me the salt, or you're trying to buy something. You have to be more accurate when you start to try to convey your your thoughts on your feelings or something like that. But even native speakers have problems with that. There's always problems with communication. Now, my point that I'm getting to is that with grammar translation, the focus is very much on the accuracy. That's why there's so many revisions of ancient texts, because we're going back and we're going back with better understanding of the language that's evolved through academic study over time. And then we're going, remember that they said the deus ex morta or whatever in this context? Well, it actually, if you put it in this sequence of words, it actually means something that's is a little above. It's not the same level, a little above. And I was like, well, okay, so in the past, a lot of this was to do with religion. So an ancient text, you know, from Rome and all that sort of stuff that people wanted to do. I'm like, well, how does that really apply to today? Because, it's religion has lost a lot of focus in its world, prominence, we'll say. So one thing that I came across was in science. So right now, a lot of very cutting edge science in AI, in the biomechanical realm, like CRISPR and that sort of thing, it's been done in China. Now, China, the scientists are releasing their papers in Chinese. So there are more and more students at big academic universities like MIT that are they don't want to, but they are having to study and learn Chinese in order to be able to understand the new science that's coming out in the world. And, you know, they're not looking to, they are looking to speak Chinese so they can talk with the scientists, but it's more to do with the academic side. They need to really understand the papers. So this rigorous process of kind of like grammar translation, the meaning of the word, is going to be very pertinent, because, you know, as we know in science and experiments, if you get that one word off, especially if you're just editing some DNA or something like that, whoops, I thought I was creating a new kind of dog or something like that, and no, I've created a Crimea or whatever, a Wendigo. It's a dog banana hybrid that's going to take over the world. I really wish my Chinese was a bit better. Because, you know, we have this sort of thing when we do these direct translations of, you're like, what are you talking about? Like, I know, for example, this is more of a funny example. In Chinese, the word for chicken, it's female, like a hen or a rooster, something to do with chicken, translates to basically prostitute or whore. I think it's regardless of gender. And imagine if you're doing that text and you're just like, hold on, this science experiment, that means that I need a chicken. And you kind of mistranslate that, and then you're suddenly experimenting on prostitutes. That's not what we want to be doing. I know it's a ludicrous example, but, you know, there might be something else out there that's a little bit more subtle that lends it, and you're like, oh no, it could completely change the whole experiment.
I totally agree. I mean, that's always a problem with learning languages, though, isn't it? That, you know, subtle difference can cause huge differences in every language. In fact, you can even get the thing where exactly the same word means something totally different. So it has to be contextual, doesn't it? So I think I sort of missed the point there, though, about how does that relate to grammar translation?
Well, the grammar translation is what I'm saying is that it's there's so much more focus on accuracy, on rigor, on really understanding the language as a subject, as the focus, rather than a means to get across what you want with, you know, the communicative language teaching aspect. I feel it's more like you're immersed in the language and you're trying to utilize and learn that language as you go, as you learn, as you apply the language. Whereas with grammar translation, it seems like it's more that you're just focusing solely on the language and not utilizing it for any sort of kind of productive aspect, but more just to kind of like really understand it. You know what I mean?
That's right. So it's receptive rather than productive. It's very receptive, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think there is production in there as well, actually, but it's kind of, as you say, the focus is definitely accuracy and not fluency.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a method of accuracy. So we are...
It is a method of accuracy.
That's the takeaway.
And that's where...
See you later, folks.
That's where shadowing would come in for that fella, where that would be his fluency bits, where he's saying, he's, you know, practicing with his mouth how to actually say.
I never actually considered shadowing to be a grammar translation method, but I don't think
it necessarily is. This was just what he did.
Yeah,
when he was learning languages. Yeah,
it would be.
And
it would,
you know,
be
he spoke things like Mandarin and Arabic and stuff like that. So,
but it makes sense as a productive version of grammar translation, because you're not producing anything new. You're just kind of translating it. But orally.
Yeah, basically.
Or without even thinking of the meaning, I guess. You don't necessarily have
You don't think about the meaning. Yeah. You don't think about the meaning. The meaning bit comes when you're actually doing the written translation. Yeah. But for shadowing, the idea wasn't to think about the meaning. It was the pronunciation was the big focus. Try to sound as much as possible like the audio that you're listening to.
Yeah. Yeah, and you did it quite extensively, if I remember correctly, in Spain.
Yeah, it didn't help.
No, you got really good at reciting the first couple of chapters of Harry Potter, if I remember correctly.
El señor y la señora.
No!
El número cuatro de private drive. Estaban orgullosos de decir que eran muy normales, afortunadamente. The Spanish people always laugh.
What was it about the clouds? You were always going on about the dark clouds are coming in the sky.
I know, it's bloody awful.
So I can't remember.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time on that, and it wasn't useful for me at all. I can testify that it was a waste of time. Audio lingualism was good, though. But we're doing that another day, aren't we?
We are, yeah. Cats out of the bag. So, it's actually a good tangent, route into, segue into our analysis. So, I've got to give a little bit of background with this analysis. So, the problem with grammar translation is that for us... viewing, reacting, and analyzing, and you know, as something for you as well, is unless it's all in the native language of whoever's teaching and of the classroom. So if you only speak English and you're trying to analyze something, and it's not in English, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. So what we did was we both have a background in Spanish. You know, Rich's Spanish is 10 times, as Vegeta would say, it's over 5,000 power level compared to mine. Yeah, but if yours is rusty, mine's kind of like falling apart at the end of the garden. But it's something that we're kind of familiar with. So we chose a Spanish classroom that's grammar translation, and we also purposely chose a young learners as well, because the idea being that the language is going to be graded not just for the students but also for us as well, to help us. And when we analyze this, we're going to just continue to analyze as usual, but it might not be the best example of grammar translation. I kind of feel like this one's probably going to be a bit of a lazy grammar translation method. Good morning. Very good. Okay, so food vocabulary.
What I don't get here is why have they got all these Spanish words on the wall there? Because these are Spanish kids, right? Spanish speaking.
Yeah, but you
know. They're going to know what lemons are, aren't they? I mean, they're like 6 or 7. You don't need those things on the wall with the Spanish words, do they? Do 7-year-olds need that? Seems more like a 4-year-old, 3-year-old thing, though.
I don't know. I kind of often I see classrooms like this, and it's either the classroom is shared with different levels. Yeah. So there might be younger kids that come into the classroom, or the teacher just likes it as an aesthetic, you know.
Right, could be that.
Have all these words up, you know, like I used to have these things in China. You could buy these like plastic acrylic posters that would have vocabularies of all the numbers, animals and stuff like that in English and Chinese. And I would see them up in classrooms and, you know, parents' homes all the time. And it's just like, here we go. this is English, and this is your exposure. So, you know, it will help somehow. And, you know.
Mm. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
It's definitely not part of grammar translation method. So they're listening to a song?
Yeah.
Okay. Are they repeating?
No.
She just told them to listen, right?
Yeah, she just told them to listen. She said, I'm going to show you a video. Or I'm going to show you a song. Some of them are now repeating. I mean, the video is obviously intended for them to repeat, but she didn't tell them to.
Oh, that's what I thought that was... maybe part of it, like she's showing them the word, letting him, you know, drink it in, and then doing it again to drill.
Yeah, she might be.
See ya.
Oh no, didn't even get a laugh by the funny thing at the end. These kids hate that.
Is it maple learning? We have a lot of this stuff. Oh, she's asking them what vocabulary they remember.
Gonna have a look at the words.
Okay, bueno, estos son los nombres de comidas en inglés. Pizza.
Okay. So here's the. Okay, so she's doing the English first and then the translation after.
She's drilling the English and then she's kind of asking them how they say that in Spanish, which is a little bit pointless, really, isn't it?
Well, I mean, this is literally translation. Curry rice.
I'm not opposed to using a bit of L1 in the classroom, but this just seems pointless. I mean, like, what? The kids know how to say this stuff in Spanish, and you're showing them a picture. So why would you have to show them the words in Spanish? I don't get it.
I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, it's literally
it's like
translation,
yeah, exactly.
English. So I don't know if this is like, yeah,
it's weird.
It's kind of weird. This is the focus, but hey ho. So that, I feel like that could have been a more important point, because he's asking for more of an explanation. I thought that would be a good time
he said doesn't curry have like a sauce, and she said yeah, it has meat and sauce, and here's the sauce, and she pointed at it, and she said something about coffee that I didn't catch.
Yeah, but like what I was going to say was, like, he's asking questions about it, and you know, it's a lot easier then to kind of explain a little bit more or do concept check. Just because you're doing grammar translation doesn't mean that you can't do concept checking questions. Be like, oh, curry, what is curry? What is a Roth con? Is it curry? Is that what they say?
That's what they were saying, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and they could be like, just to, because I don't remember using curry a lot in Spanish, you know? So, you know, maybe they, I'd probably
curry.
It's because
they don't eat it, really. Yeah. But they do, the word is curry, but yeah. they don't tend to eat a lot of curry. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see where she's going. I want to see where she's going. Yeah. Oh, fideo. It used to be very popular in Valencia.
Yeah, all right. For example, there, it was just chicken, but she showed fried chicken, so...
Right, good point.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's a problem. That can always be a problem, though, can't it? I mean, people do make those mistakes where they show the picture and... You know, it's just like chicken, but it's like, this is actually a kind of a type of chicken. And what about the animal?
But they even said pollo, and you wouldn't say pollo for that anyway as well, because, you know, they have their own word for... Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like this is just not a good example at all, unfortunately.
It feels very much to me like this is backwards, like... If you're going to show the Spanish, then surely show the picture and the Spanish and get the kids to shout out the English.
Yes.
Wouldn't that make a bit more sense?
That, especially since you've just shown them that clip, and it's like, oh, what do you remember? As you said, what do you remember? And like, okay, let's see if we can do all of them. That would make more sense.
Yeah. Fish. Fish. Scow.
Una vez más.
Oh,
one more time. Oh, we're doing this. Okay. The song. Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Right, let's get past that. You get the idea.
It's a very loose description of a song.
That's good anyway. Desks are being moved.
Is she...
handouts being prepared. Waving to her assistant with the cat. Oh, it's a new angle. Okay.
Okay, so she's got them into, looks like, pairs, small groups.
Yeah, it looks like it.
So they're going to do an activity together. I like that. She's got a teaching assistant.
She's got two.
Unless he's a very awkward student, just in the corner. I don't think this is my class, but I don't want to exit.
Maybe he's the local mafia representative. It's kind of funny how he's wearing sunglasses.
That's true, yeah. I didn't notice that. I thought he just had dark, mysterious, romantic eyes.
Okay.
This is taking such a long time to set up.
Okay.
Okay, put your names at the top.
No, nada más el nombre y apellidos, es todo. Luego,
oh no.
Van a escribir, ya que hayan puesto el nombre, van a escribir donde dice el nombre de la comida,
right.
Lo van a escribir en español, donde está la rayita, si ven la rayita al lado de los nombres. Exacto, van a poner el nombre en español y en la parte blanca van a dibujar la comida. Por ejemplo, pizza. En este caso no tiene rayita, okay. Porque se dice igual en español. Pero aquí van a dibujar una pizza. Y la pueden colorear, dibujar todo lo que
So, I'm quite catchy with the noise, but I think the idea is that they get the words in English and they have to write the words in Spanish and then draw it. Maybe we can actually get a close-up of one of the worksheets. How long is this going for?
Like half an hour.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of this like coming up, isn't there, and asking a question. It's a really rubbish way of see, look, her instructions weren't good enough. That's why this is happening. There wasn't any instruction checking. She's getting person after person coming up and saying what do we have to actually do? The fact that they're sharing worksheets, I don't like that either. It just means that one person sat there while watching someone else draw a picture.
Yeah,
because obviously
true.
I didn't really
think about that for the moment. I thought they were put in pairs, but yeah, you're right. They all just have one worksheet. That doesn't make any sense.
Those two boys, they're actually doing it quite well because one of them's working on one and another one's working on another. That actually does make sense. But then where you put these two people's...
I mean, with grammar translation, the idea is when you're doing kind of words, you have these word lists, right, that you can take home and you can study, refer back to. But if it's just one sheet, then who's going to take this home? That someone's going to be left without a vocabulary sheet. What if there's homework or they want to refer back? Or yeah, oh, maybe we can see. Can we see? No, go back, left. Go back.
Oh.
No, okay. I was talking to the cameraman.
Oh, to the cameraman.
French phrase is cameraman.
So they're writing down the Spanish, not
my understanding.
English.
My understanding was that they have the English on the sheet. They have to write the Spanish and then draw a picture of the food. So there is some comprehension going on, at least. They have to understand the English word. But, I mean, obviously, they'll just ask their mate if they don't know. Like, what French fry, what is that? You know, oh, it's patata frita. Okay. You know, so it's a bit of a waste of time. Where are we going? Where's it going to go? This, yeah. Is it just going to be this for ages? Yeah, the mafia representative in the corner is making sure they all do their work.
And bless them, these kids are so enthusiastic.
They are actually, given that it's incredibly boring what they're doing. The funny thing is as well, like, this lady as a kind of the personality, she actually has like a good sort of teaching personality. Like, she seems to be kind of friendly. She's talking with the kids, you know, she's nice. There's not like there's no disciplinarianness about her. Like, she was speaking to them like, okay, guys, now what you're going to do is this. Now what you're going to do is that, you know, mm-hmm. It's actually quite nice. But like, what is this method? I mean, I actually thought at the start of the video that it was like it was going to be an example of what not to do. But the fact that they're dragging this section on this long, I don't think it is that. I think it's really this is the method that they're using here. And I it's just extraordinary. As you've pointed out, it doesn't even really meet the requirements of grammar translation. But it certainly demonstrates the negative side of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should see how this gets tied up, at least towards the end.
Yeah. What's that all about?
Oh, they're checking?
Yeah, I think so. I just sort of say, oh. I wonder if I can...
Yeah, it's
I can't quite see what's written. You can see that there's the pictures are on there, yeah.
Oh, has she gone back to the screen?
Yeah, that's the spin on. Hello, YouTube? Holy rice. That's what it was called. Holy rice. These kids can't wait to get out of here, can they? Some of them have got their coats on already.
Yeah. Okay, I think this is probably all that we need to see. Yeah, so I think when people think about grammar translation method, they have a bad impression of it, that is what they're thinking of, right? They're thinking of, okay, here's some English words. What is it in your language? Oh, it's this in your language. What is it in? Okay, now I want you to repeat the English words a couple of times. Okay, now here's a worksheet, and this is all the English. Draw a picture of the thing, and then write the the word in your language.
Mm.
There we go. Oh, and let's just check that at the end. Repeat the English words a couple more times.
I think it's arguable that the kids didn't actually learn anything. And I'm almost certain they'll completely forget everything.
Yeah.
The little recap at the end where she's just like, oh, what was fish again? Or, you know, oh, what was, yes, that's what she said. She said the English word, like, what was that? What's curry rice? Oh, yeah, it's that in Spanish. So she'd be asking them what it is, and then you tell me in Spanish the name of it at the end. I feel like she probably could have done that at the start of the class. Probably could have just showed them that video and then done that. And that was like her, you know, that was her lesson objectives achieved moment of, you know, oh, how do you say fish again? Or what is fish again in Spanish? Oh, yeah, it's basically, you know. Yeah, I think they could have done that just immediately right after the video. The drawing arguably adds some element of personalization, but the actual transmission of the language was so poor that nothing's going to stick at all. I don't like the video, really, to be honest with you. It was just a substitution for flashcards. I understand why people use them, but I don't like flashcards either, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, I understand why people use them, but I don't think it's a very good way of... It's kind of presenting items devoid of context, isn't it? And it can have problems, as you said, where we've got the chicken and it's actually fried chicken and things like that. That's why you need context. So all in all, for me, yeah, it was a total waste of time.
So that video was disappointing. I think an example of why everyone hates on grammar translation. We've got another clip that hopefully kind of shows a little bit more of a positive light of how grammar translation can be used.
Today, let's read a little paragraph. This paragraph talks about Bob's weekly routine. Este párrafo habla de la rutina semanal de Bob. So, ustedes tienen que leerlo. Por favor, léanlo y me avisan cuando termine, ¿okay?
Okay. All right, that's very good. That's very good. I like that. She just gave him an instruction to read it. And she said, let me know when you're finished. Now, I think what she should have done is said, okay, I'm going to give you 3 minutes to read that. Okay, so just read it to yourself, 3 minutes, and then put a timer up. I think would be a good way of doing it, because now we've got this kind of ambiguous when we're gonna move on kind of question in people's heads, right? Mm-hmm. It's always good to give people a time limit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with this. Showing a text on the screen, asking students to read it, I do it. Although she is using L1
as the language of...
See, now she's in this situation where she has to say, did you finish, guys? It would have been much better to give them a time limit, I think, because mm-hmm. especially with three people, they're going to finish at different rates.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and if one of them says, I'm finished, the other one's like, oh, I'm a slow reader, oh God, shall I just say that I'm finished so I don't get pulled up?
That's true.
Yes. Yes. Noe, did you finish?
Yes.
Okay. Here.
Yeah, it's overloading them, and also the animation's just ridiculous. So I can see where this is going, and I think it looks good, but like just give them one. Why have you given them all four? You're confusing people. Give them that one and show them what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just give them one without the effect.
Six sentences. I'm gonna read these sentences.
Just say it in Spanish.
After that, you're gonna translate these sentences?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, isn't it? She's actually giving the instructions in English now. She couldn't have done
that before. But she...
Spanish for me, okay? Okay.
Eventually,
one of them says okay. Tenemos seis oraciones. Voy a leerlas y luego ustedes la traducen en español, ¿ya?
Gosh, she always seemed annoyed when she said it in Spanish. Then, oh, look, what you're gonna do is this, all right?
Necesitan su diccionario de inglés. ¿Sí tienen su diccionario?
Yes, teacher.
Okay.
Oh, they're so enthusiastic.
The first say, Bob lives in a small flat in London. La segunda,
she's actually diving into a little book as well. Why don't they just let them use the computer? Why do they have to use a book? You just throw it into Google. Like, what's the purpose of teaching them this skill of referencing the book? I could understand like 30 years ago doing that, because you want kids to be good at doing that 30 years ago, but now it's completely useless, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't need to use the book.
Wakes up and has a shower. He usually has a typical English breakfast with eggs and bacon.
He works in an office in the center of London.
His seat flat is piso o departamento, como lo conocemos aquí. La segunda, he wakes up and has a shower.
Él se despierta y se baña.
Listo. Muy bien, Haley. Thank you.
So have they've had some time to translate this then?
Yeah, so I've just skipped forward a few minutes and they're actually coming to the answers now. So they've got the sentences in English and they're translating it to Spanish.
Right, okay. So the activity before, they were just going through, they were using their book to reference and then translate.
That's what they were doing.
Right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify. Okay.
The third, he usually has a typical English breakfast with eggs and bacon.
Okay. Él usualmente tiene un típico desayuno inglés con huevos y tocino.
Bien. Muy bien. Very good. Nice.
This is one of the problems, isn't it, with grammar translations. It really encourages that kind of word for word style thing. Mm-hmm. And I think if I was going to do grammar translation, I would immediately want to get away from that, first of all. And I'd want to say, we're doing it in terms of phrases. And the actual translation that she has here, obviously, they have done it in phrases because she's writing Spanish. So of course she's going to write it correctly. But this girl, even though she's Spanish and she knows how to speak Spanish correctly, she just gave a very unusual Spanish sentence where she said, él usualmente tiene, and she actually said that. She said, él usualmente tiene, right? Now, that sounds like weird Spanish.
Yeah, because you don't have the subject at the start, right?
You rarely use the pronoun, but you definitely would not put usualmente there, not naturally. You'd put it there where they put it in the answer, usualmente tiene, and they didn't put el, right? And the thing is, the teacher has just said, okay, and not said anything about that, whereas I'd be making a point about it. I'd be like, oh, dear me, Haley, who's been translating word for word? What did we learn in lesson one of grammar translation method? Because this is a thing, translation, and I make this deal actually to my students as well. Translation does actually work. You can translate in your head, but you have to do phrase to phrase. You can't, you cannot. If you go word for word, you're going to be in a world of pain. You can't do it. You got to go phrase for phrase.
Isn't that what they mean by translation, though? Like, isn't what you're referring to more interpretation?
I don't think so. I think there's no reason why translation has to be word for word translation, because she's showing the answer on the board and it's not word for word.
What I would like to see would be to actually go through that process of translation and then go, okay, now does this translation into Spanish seem right for you, and kind of get them to go, no, like, as you point out, no, this is a bit weird. I wouldn't normally say it like this. It'd be like, so
that would be great.
That would be an inductive point where they can kind of go, oh, when we're translating, languages don't work like that. It's not this word means this word. And especially when it comes to phrases. And I think that's one of the big points when I was looking at grammar translation, was that they have to do this rigorous study to then keep going over the translation to actually get the meaning correct in their language. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to study it so in depth, because of this problem, that it's not, there's no direct, there's often no direct translations, especially when you go into phrases. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to have seen a class where they have that as part of the process. But
yeah. All right. Yeah, I agree.
And the last one, he works in an office in the center of London.
Él trabaja en una oficina en el centro de London.
Muy bien. Thank you, Noelia. Muchas gracias. Ariana, did you finish?
Yeah.
Okay. He sits in front of the computer all day and writes email. ¿Qué quiere decir esta oración en español?
Él se sienta enfrente de la computadora todo el día y escribe email.
Muy bien.
Can we see what they're doing next?
Muy bien.
Well, I just there was an interesting point there. There was an interesting thing where this lady read this and she said una oficina en el centro de London, she said. And I thought that you could have an interesting discussion there, but maybe I'm just trying to make too much of this method.
I think the way that you're thinking would be the way of someone that's approaching this academically would do. So you would probably say you were a lecturer at university and you're going through some ancient text or something like that, and you're translating it together with your students. These would be discussion points during the course of the class where you can go, hey, so did you notice this? Well, this part is actually, it's not so clear, and blah blah blah. And that's where you go into detail, and that's where you add the more academia side to it, and that's kind of what I think would make the actual subject more interesting, these little side tangents that you could go on.
Yeah, and also thinking of it maybe a bit too much like a CLT teacher having discussions about things.
Tenemos algunos verbos, so I need to find the meaning in the English dictionary, okay?
No, really? Come on, they've just done that. They can tell you that. They don't need to check this. Really? I don't think they need to check this. I don't think these kids have like such a low level of English.
No.
Necesito que encuentren el significado de estos verbos en su diccionario de inglés.
Are they going to do the infinitive, or are they doing conjugations as well?
Yeah, I believe they're doing the infinitive. They're just doing a word-for-word translation, right, which is not a great activity. But okay, let's say that you're just checking the meaning of the words in a quick way by saying, what's the meaning of that in Spanish? Yeah, okay, it can be done. I don't think the dictionaries are needed. I don't think she needed to say the instructions in Spanish either. I think they already understood when she said it in English. It looked to me like they understood. You know, they didn't look confused. Maybe this one at the bottom has a slightly lower level, but this one second for top, she was already looking in their book. Mm-hmm. So she knew what to do. There was no need to say the instruction in Spanish. Oh, and in fact, it looks like she doesn't actually give them time to do what she just said anyway, and she's just going to go straight into it, which is obviously what she can do.
Okay, Ariana, ¿encontraste el significado de leave?
Yes.
No, it was not that she found it. She already knew it, obviously. You haven't even given time to look for it. Did you find Liv? No, she's got it.
Maybe.
It's like this is an example of a teacher sticking to their lesson plan too hard, I think. She's got, I'll let them look up the words. Oh, wait, they already know them.
Muy bien, very good. Heidi, ¿encontraste el significado de wake up?
I kind of feel like with this, it's somewhat similar to the class we've seen before.
Hang on, let's just go on a little bit more.
Okay. ¿Puedes leernos tu oración?
With which verb, teacher?
Yes. No, only one.
I work every day.
Very good, thank you.
One of the things, so we looked at a couple of examples, and a lot of this is kind of, basically, I feel like, rather than grammar translation, it's more kind of like a crutch for teacher. You know, they're obviously a native speaker of their language, and they feel maybe a little bit more comfortable with doing classes that are in their language that they can always kind of refer back to, their L1, and then the translation aspect. It's again, like I said before, that kind of lays the idea of grammar translation method. But I don't, if you're out there and you've got a good example of grammar translation, please send us an email or leave us a message in the comments below, because I believe that that grammar translation can be used effectively, and it can be a good way to learn another language, especially at an academic level. I would love to see a lesson where they are studying an ancient language or something like that, or another language. I'd preferably like to see a lesson where they're studying a modern language and they're kind of just kind of treating the language as a subject. You know, it's, oh, this is an interesting point about this word. If you put it with this word, it means this. When you put it with this word, it means this. You know, like, and actually kind of, because you know, words are so interesting, and I'd love to see students kind of build up that engagement through just how fascinating language is, and another language is, outside of just it being used as communication, just as something that's like, and then this word translate, and you kind of see that this English word that we have, this came from this word, and you can see how it's moved over time, and how it's taken on different meanings and how we come to different points. I'd love to see a class like that. But I think when everyone thinks of grammar translation, it's the classes that we've seen today. And I don't think it fully represents what could be done with grammar translation, or what has probably been done in the past that made it so widespread, so prominent and so popular with all these ancient scholars, that they would use this method, and it was probably using it, you know, with a dialogic, you know, learning where they're kind of like talking about different meanings and stuff like that. I can imagine that class, and I can imagine that being so interesting, you know, especially where they like imagine. So
right, it's like talking about like pathos and mythos and things like that, like you do in philosophy, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The pathos, what's the logos, what's the mythos? Yeah, that stuff is interesting to talk about.
And then you can kind of, you know, bleed that in with a bit of history as well, and be like, well,
and culture.
And they think at this time.
Yeah, right.
And then you get the broader context behind the words. And when you get that broader context behind the words, it makes it helps so much. And, you know, I find that when I study Chinese as well, you get a history, you know, something I can never remember the Chinese when I'm trying to give examples off the top of my head, but when you're talking about home in Chinese, it kind of translates to something like pig pen or something like that, and there was a whole reason for that, you know, like there at that time they were it was a particular farming type of culture or something. There's always these meanings behind the words. Sometimes you come across meanings behind the words. Sometimes it's just obvious, like volcano, and translated in Chinese is fire mountain or something like that. It's really obvious. But then you come across these ones where you're like, so this character is a combination of different words. But why did they use this combination? And then you look into the history, and it can be fascinating, because languages are fascinating, and it doesn't have to be about communication. And I think that was the thing that I got the most out of looking at grammar translation, that it doesn't have to be that you're trying to learn the language to communicate with the language. You could just love the language. Just love the language and love how interesting and as a subject it is, and how this it's a living thing, like an organism that evolves and changes over time. And, you know, you really, to properly understand it, you go back in, you have to learn history, you have to learn culture, and you have to learn that civilization. And, you know, it's a pathway to a lot of love for the language, but also, you know, the wider world of that language, especially when languages have used into like English. You know, we've got English for Australian, American, you know, British, South African, Indian, and they have their own different applications. There's Korean. I would even go as far as to say there's like Korean English now. You know, where you go to Korea and they're like, "Oh, here's your service," and you're like, "What do you mean service?" And like, "Oh, service means like free stuff that you get." Do you know when you buy things? And you're like, "Oh, that's cool." The creative use of different. And you can see English is changing, and it's taking on new meanings, and it's applied in new cultures. And you're like, wow, this is so, so interesting. I think that's a route as well to learn a language.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, languages are fascinating, and being able to, and I think you're hitting on a point there where you're saying that one way that you could really optimize the use of the grammar translation method is by tapping into that actual interest in languages, which can be there and perhaps, well, wasn't at all used in those examples. I did think that the second example was better because we actually got grammar translation for one. Mm-hmm. We actually got, and she was using it, she actually spoke English in the first class. The teacher didn't say anything other than the target language in English, but this teacher actually said, you know, now we're going to do this in English, although her English was a little bit rusty, but at least she used it. Just such a shame though to see those students get their time kind of wasted, because they could have done more with it. And I think they could do something. There is something there. Obviously there's something there, because it was used for a long time as the only method, and no one saw a need actually to move on to a more accessible method until education sort of spread to the masses. So there's obviously things there to take from it, and tapping into interest would definitely be a way of doing it, as well as the other kind of elements of modern language teaching that which I was speaking about, of, you know, challenging stronger students and, you know, not using L1 unless it's necessary. Even with grammar translation, you don't need to just use L1 just for the fun of it. Mm-hmm. If you give the instructions in L2 and the students understand, why do you need to then say L1? And I'm not saying don't. You know, I understand with grammar translation that the method is that in the classroom you tend to use L1 to explain things. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to. If the students understand the L2, you don't, you know. You only use it. It's a crutch that you can rely on. And, you know, fair enough, if people really want to be able to do that, then all right. As we know, as CLT teachers, it is not necessary. You can teach any level and any age without any of L1. You can just use entirely the target language. However, if you are using L1, well, at least just think about whether it's necessary to be used or not.
That's true. Okay, well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on grammar translation method. Again, if you have examples that you think are good examples of grammar translation, or times where you found it interesting or used very well, send us an email at eltundertheCovers@gmail.com or leave a comment below. We'd love to hear that. Other than that, goodbye.
like, subscribe, share on social media.
If you're looking for more information from myself, you can go to teamteachchina.com. We've got a whole bunch of materials, PowerPoints that you can use instantly in the classroom. We've got a Team Teacher China YouTube channel where we have videos teaching you how to use those materials. Team Teacher English, where we put those materials into a video form for self-study. And Team Teacher Baby, where I take my experience as a teacher and put that into parenting.
And go to youtube.com/professorrich to see some English teaching. You can catch me weekly live streams on Oxford Online English YouTube channel. Oh, and also you can do a YouTube search for POG space UK and you would get my alpha version of my new gaming channel, which actually just have some trial content on there at the moment. You can email us here at eltunderthecovers@gmail.com if you have anything you'd like to contribute to the show.
Smash that like button, share and subscribe.
And watch 100% of the video and don't click off. Thank you.
Bye.